Emperors of Rome is an independent, listener-supported podcast. To keep this podcast ad-free and access material like bonus episodes, consider giving your support. This month's bonus episode will look at the relationship between Octavian and Cicero, and there will be a clip at the end of this episode. To hear it, go to patreon.com/Rome Podcast. Thanks. Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast with Matt Smith and Rhiannon Evans. This is episode CCLVIII, Young Warlord. The decade after Caesar's murder is make or break for Octavian. He is very young and inexperienced. He is often between Mark Antony and the Senate, and he needs to avenge Caesar and become his acknowledged heir. Despite these setbacks, he is slowly setting the stage for breaking the Republic. Here's Rhiannon Evans. So when we last left Octavian, Caesar had died. He'd broken off his schooling in northern Greece, where he'd been hanging out, lad's trip, from memory, with his teacher.
There was a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. There's always somebody responsible there. And he decided to embrace his role as Caesar's heir, which means back to Rome.
Yes, indeed. He's got to go back and claim his inheritance. And, of course, he's got, well, he hasn't got troops there, but there are troops there. I remember we talked about how there were legions in Apollonia, where he is in northern Greece.
Mm.
So there's some speculation that he could have taken those troops with him, come in with an army, but he doesn't. He returns very quietly with his mates, with Agrippa and probably a few of the others. And they land, well, you always land if you're going back from Greece, in Brundisium, the nearest part of the heel of Italy.
Yeah.
They actually land just south of it to avoid the troops stationed there. So they really don't want to signal that they're around. They don't want to make any kind of alarm or set any alerts off, I guess.
Mm. So keeping a low profile, not taking troops, not drawing a lot of attention.
Yes.
Because it strikes me that Octavius, soon to be Octavian, is not a challenge to somebody like Mark Antony, but he's perhaps, you know, an unknown. And at the very most, he's going to perhaps wonder, am I in danger?
Absolutely. I think it's more about that. He doesn't know what's going on in Rome. He doesn't know if the assassins have won out and are in charge.
Mm.
And if they're in charge there, then he's in danger as Caesar's heir, absolutely. But of course, he's kind of in danger from everybody because he doesn't know the lie of the land with Antony either. So he kind of shrewdly assesses that it would escalate things to come with any kind of fanfare.
Yeah.
None of that.
So what does he find when he reaches Rome then?
When he reaches Rome, he looks kind of powerless. He's never had a magistracy. He's got no army. He's sick a lot of the time.
Mm.
And what he finds is that the assassins aren't in charge. We think he gets there maybe in early summer. In fact, who's in charge, of course, is Antony, because Antony is consul. He has all of Caesar's papers as well. So as well as having the top imperium, he's in charge of what Octavian's really interested in, which is the will and what property Caesar has and the powers he has as well, that we'll come to talk about. Antony has sort of let the conspirators off the hook a bit. Mm. I mean, he hasn't stopped them from carrying on in whatever roles they have. He has negotiated as a kind of, okay, we won't just have you all killed instantly, but everything that Caesar brought in, including some of the roles you hold because he appointed you, all of that's kept in place. Mm-hmm. So that's his kind of compromise. As we'll see, Octavian will not be happy with this.
Yes, I'm not surprised. So one of the few things that Octavius has then is his association with Caesar. So how does he try and promote this?
I love that I've schooled you in him being Octavius, technically. I'm actually calling him Octavian now, but you're sort of being more accurate.
As soon as we get to Will has been read out, I'll swap.
I mean, he wants to be called Gaius Julius Caesar and none of this Octavian stuff, but you're doing due diligence. Yes. So he's definitely trying to promote that association from Caesar straight away. And Appian tells us that he does this by, in July, which is why we know he's back in summer, he decides he'll put on the Games of Venus Genetrix, which Caesar had promised. And it's actually a direct challenge to Brutus had previously put on a Games of Apollo.
Mm.
So this is kind of making his mark Venus is the top god, okay? That's going to change too. But he calls them the Games of the Victory of Caesar.
Right.
Changing the names of things, interesting. And he wants, as a sign of this, to put Caesar's golden chair and his wreath on display. So kind of emblems of Caesar's power and majesty. But Antony says, no, you're not having them.
Yeah.
So he's still in charge at this point. Octavian's always trying to capitalize on the association with Caesar. And he will be able to do that later. But right now, Antony is not having any of this. I think not just as a, I'm going to put the young whippersnapper down, but also as a, we really don't want to rile up the Republicans. Why would we? This is like baiting the libs or something. Are the Republicans the libs? I don't know.
I don't know.
This scenario, probably not. They're more conservative.
But you don't want to make a martyr of Caesar.
Yes.
Yeah, that's dangerous territory.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're talking about Octavian here, but at times I think Antony is quite shrewd.
Mm.
And I think this is one of them. These are the games at which the comet, the Sidus Iulium, the Julian star appears, the one that will be later a sign that he's been deified.
Mm.
Octavian's going to weaponize that. Antony is also in charge of what's going on with the property. He's kept all the papers and he doesn't release any of the money left to Octavian in Caesar's will. Some people think he'd already spent it. So he still has no power, Octavian, no army.
And he couldn't pay any troops anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, so now Octavian?
Yeah, I think so.
Great.
I think we can't call him Octavius forever.
Okay, we put that off long enough. All right. So what is the path forward? I feel that there's a risk that Octavian is going to be used and manipulated, if anything, or that people are going to look at him and see an opportunity.
Indeed. I mean, he is only 18.
Mm.
Yeah, various sides want to work with him because although he's had no formal power, there is authority in the association with Caesar. So who can make use of him? Now, as things turn out, he will make use of them. But at the beginning, we know that he says he'll work with the Senate. We learn this from Cicero, and we're going to be talking a lot more about Cicero in the bonus episode this month and what Cicero has to say about Octavian, which is quite interesting. He says he'll work with the Senate, but he also resigns himself to an alliance with Antony eventually because he needs the other Caesarians on side. So he's kind of walking between the two sides always. And it's not just Antony who's a Caesarian. We've also got names that might come up again, like Balbus. He's extremely wealthy and therefore extremely useful. Other names we might hear later, like Oppius, Matius, Sassurna, Rabirius. They all want someone who will continue Caesar's policies, his popularis policies. And of course, these are useful to Octavian because he needs money. He might get it from them. Ronald Syme, the...
Patron saint of Roman history.
Well, of being cynical about the Roman Revolution, as his book is called. He points out that we don't know where this money comes from.
Yes.
We never find out. But Balbus would be a good guess. Matius is the one who helps him fund the Games of Venus. Funding from your mates to put on these big occasions.
Yeah.
Nicolaus of Damascus, whose information is going to run out soon, so I feel I should push him forward as much as possible. Our very unreliable source, the biography. He says that Octavian uses the money Caesar had amassed to go to Parthia. Maybe. Unless Antony's already got his hands on it, who knows. But he does have access to Caesar's estates somehow, and he starts selling them off. So this means he can pay funds to the people who, you know, property or money was left to them in Caesar's will. So he's kind of buying popularity that way. It's a start. There's a theory that there's a sort of taint on some of this land because Caesar got it through proscriptions. So by kind of getting rid of it, he's getting rid of that sort of nasty image.
Yeah.
Anyway, he has enough cash from somewhere. We don't know exactly where to raise an army in the second half of 44. He wants this army to avenge Caesar's murder, but Antony's not interested and he kind of needs Antony on side.
Okay. So this is going to start to come ahead at this point. Mm. I know that Antony was a close ally of Caesar, but there's enough differences in opinion between him and Octavian. And they both seem to be from the reading of it, just such strong characters that neither of them are going to back down.
And I guess there's a lot of reading between the lines, but what is in this for Antony of getting rid of the assassins?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot in it for Octavian, because then he can, as he will, and I can say this with the benefit of hindsight, show himself to be the devoted son. But Antony is still playing, I mean, he's older, he's in some ways still playing the Republican game. It's just he wants to be in charge of it all.
Mm.
So pursuing the assassins at this particular time is not really useful to Antony. He's got other fish to fry. He wants power in Gaul, basically. That's what he wants of Caesar's legacy and all the money he squirreled away. And this disagreement between them, and probably not just based on that, becomes public knowledge. To the extent that Antony's officers come between the two of them, or come to Antony and say, can you criticize Octavian less? He's Caesar's heir and we're Caesar's men. So it's like the parents are arguing or something, you know, they just don't want this. They get torn quite often, the troops of Caesar, between these two. Out of all of this, though, the really important thing for Octavian is that the adoption in the will is established as not just him inheriting the property, which he's not finding it easy to get his hands on all of that, but what he really wants is to inherit Caesar's power, to be fully his heir. So the property is kind of useful, but really he wants to have his name, to be the legal son, to have what may have been an inheritable title of imperator, that kind of thing. I mean, after all, he knows that there is at least one person blood related to Caesar. Caesarion is still around at this point. He's still in existence. There's a fake Marius already sprung up, I think we talked about in episode one.
Yeah.
So who else is going to try and step in and take him out of what he's been left? Yeah. He tries to get a law passed through the Curia Assembly, which is the one that deals with appointing magistrates, a law which will make him fully adopted. But Antony blocks this. Again, Antony is the one stepping in to keep him in his place a couple of times here. So it doesn't get passed until Octavian becomes the replacement consul in 43, the Suffect consul. He's still just 19 at that point, but he has to wait for it.
Yeah.
So at the moment, he hasn't got everything he wants in terms of his legal position as heir.
Yeah. I wonder why Antony's blocking that so hard, though. Because at some point, you know, that's going to give him a bad reputation or make him seem disloyal to Caesar's will or something like that.
I think it's partly about control.
Yeah.
Nobody really sees Octavian as a threat. Mm. You know, he's a brat. He's very young. He's got nothing. He's done nothing. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So at what point then does he become a bit of a threat?
Well, when Antony has to go away.
Yeah.
So in late 44, Antony goes off to Brundisium to meet the Macedonian legions, the ones that Octavian didn't bring back with him. He plans to take them to his province, which is Cisalpine Gaul, Gaul this side of the Alps. You know, Antony really wants control of all of Gaul, and there's an argument over that that I think we've talked about elsewhere.
Mm.
Because we're concentrating on Octavian, I won't go into the details here. But the important thing from Octavian's point of view is this gives him an excuse to front up to Antony, because to get these troops from the southern tip of Italy, Brundisium, up to Gaul, he'll have to march through Italy. So might he use them against Rome?
It's
a kind of, you know, he can raise a panic here, can Octavian? This is the excuse to raise his own army.
I was about to say, is this an excuse?
Yeah. The problem for Antony in all of this is that the army that he brings is the army that was there in Apollonia when Octavian was at school, and maybe he knocked around with them.
Mm.
They're not very loyal to Antony. They sort of prefer Caesar's heir, so many of them end up defecting to Octavian. So this kind of sort of spurious fear that Octavian has sprung up, that I need to raise an army to counter these massive troops, he ends up actually recruiting a lot of these troops.
Yeah, yeah.
An irony there.
And he's recruiting his own troops as well, though. He's not just relying on these ones coming over to him.
Yeah. Yes, he gets lots of troops in the end, as we'll see. But he shouldn't have any of them, because Antony has imperium. Antony is consul. He can do this kind of thing. He can go and bring legions. I mean, not into Rome, but his plan, his at least on the surface plan, is to take them through Italy to a province. Octavian has none of this. He has no official position, he has no imperium, and he's recruiting an army. So this is a private army. It is not Roman legions. And this is not like this has never exactly happened before. Roman legions have been subverted into various Roman warlords' own needs and civil wars. But this is completely different. And even Augustus, as he is later, will say in his epitaph, in the Res Gestae, the things done by the deified Augustus, the very first sentence of that epitaph is, at the age of 19, I engaged an army on my own initiative and at my own expense. And with it, I set the state free from the slavery which the conspirators had imposed on it.
Mm.
All right, so in the first half of that, that's illegal, but he does something noble with it.
Yes, I did it, but here are my reasons.
Exactly. That was slavery. That's such a strong word.
Yeah, yeah.
Octavian now does something even more illegal. He marches 3,000 troops to Rome.
Antony was going to do.
Hypocrisy or what?
Yeah.
In the actual forum, standing outside the temple of Castrum Pollux, he tries to make a rousing speech saying he is following in Caesar's footsteps. Appian tells us that he fails because this is the other side of, come on, Antony, calm down, this is Caesar's heir.
Mm.
His troops don't want to fight Antony. They want everyone to play nice. Why can't these two men just get on?
So when the army has more sense.
Yeah. And so there's a real tension here. Both Octavian and Mark Antony, they both want to claim superiority.
Mm-hmm.
And they both deprive their authority from Caesar. And so the troops loyal to Caesar don't want to see them in conflict. And also, there's sort of, I guess, Caesar has set the pattern now that there will be one man in control and there's two of them.
Yeah, yeah. So the Senate must be caught in the middle of all of this. I mean, some of them have been labelled, rightly so, conspirators and murderers and assassins, and the rest are just covering for everyone, I suppose. And so what's their role in all of this, this Antony versus Octavian?
Well, they try and make hay with this and get Octavian to sort of be their tool against Antony.
Mm.
So finally, in December that year, in 44, Cicero comes back to Rome and he seems to become a major go-between with Octavian. And somebody's got to do something because Octavian now has five legions, two of which are deserted from Antony.
Yeah, right.
So he has to balance out what his troops want, trying to keep a suspicious Senate on side, because even though the Senate sort of thinks, well, we need him, he's got an army and all, and we don't really have one.
Yeah.
They're very suspicious because he's Caesar's heir, right? I think everybody's just doing sidelong glances here.
Just wondering if he wants revenge.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
He seems for a while, certainly for some months, to just avoid talking about that, I think.
Mm.
We'll see. Certainly, some people in the Senate seem to be able to persuade themselves that it'll all be all right. If we just don't mention it, he won't really worry about Brutus, either of the Brutuses, Decimus or Marcus. And maybe he'll just come round.
Yeah.
They're kind of delusional. Anyway, his army, because he has an army, says Octavian has to be made a propraetor, right? It has to be made to look right. He's got this army, but he's never had any legal role, any legal position that gives him imperium, and propraetor would do that. And they need to be led. They need someone with imperium to lead them. Octavian says he'll defer to the Senate's wishes. He's already so clever in his wording, I think. And he tries to pacify his troops by telling them the Senate needs him. He also pays them. This is, I think, the beginning of bribing the army. He pays them an additional 500 denarii each and promises a lot more. A lot of the history for this period, a lot of the detail, including this, comes from Appian. And Appian has a great phrase here. He says, in this way, Octavian stiffened his mercenaries by the lavishness of gifts. It's cutting. That's book 3, chapter 48 of the Civil Wars.
So essentially, he buys himself the authority that he needs.
Yes, and threatens his way into it,
mm.
You know, when you've got an army hanging around in Rome. So he gets his imperium, and this is thanks to Cicero, in January 43. And later on, he will always commemorate this day as his dies imperii, the anniversary of the day he got imperium, his first military command. Now, this might seem all good, but it ain't going to last long. It's very fragile. The Senate thinks they can use Octavian to neutralize Antony, but this depends on everyone temporarily having amnesia about the continued existence of the assassins. I mean, some of them are still acting as governors or, you know, have roles, have magistracies within Rome. But they sort of think they can talk Octavian around. He's young. He'll come around.
Mm.
They declare war, and we've discussed this elsewhere. They declare war against Antony, who is now up north, and Octavian is sent up there, where Antony is defeated at the Battle of Forum Gallorum in April. I can't remember which episode, but I know we have discussed that battle in more detail, so I won't go into any. I thought I'd written down all the episode numbers to read them out, but...
Give me 1 second, I've got to find it. I'm going to say this is episode CLXXXII, The Empty Throne.
Ooh, we're going for fancy titles.
Part one of The Liberator's War, back in February 2022.
It's actually longer ago than I thought, but we did a deep dive on this period. So I'm going to concentrate just on the way Octavian acts and is affected now. So this battle, Antony's defeated. Octavian wasn't really in on the fighting. He was looking after the camp. The consuls led the fighting, but he gets acclaimed as an imperator anyway. There's a second battle then, which I know we went into a lot more detail about at Mutina. Antony then retreats north. At the moment, Antony seems temporarily kind of warded off.
Yes, yes.
But the consuls are now dead, kind of indirectly as a result of the battles. And the Senate wants Octavian to buddy up with one of the conspirators, Decimus Brutus. You're looking very
sidebar,
anxious.
Sorry. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Derail the entire podcast. Balbus, one of the consuls who's now dead, was he the author of one of Caesar's...
That's Hirtius.
Okay.
Aulus Hirtius.
Is he the other consul that time? Okay. All right. So I knew half of something. There we go. What was he the author of?
The book 8 of the Gallic Wars.
There we go. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. Continue.
So Octavian's got some of what he wants from the Senate. He's got an official position. But he really doesn't want what they want now, to be sent to support Decimus Brutus. Mm. He's one of the assassins.
He is,
this
yes.
is not really on his wish list. And he's also inevitably starting to feel a bit ignored by the Senate anyway, because he didn't get a triumph. I don't know why he was thinking he'd get a triumph. He didn't really do that much in those battles.
Yes, yeah. Plus triumph against Roman troops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets an ovation, which is a kind of
a slow clap.
Honor. Yeah. Perhaps more crucially, his army don't get the promised payments.
Mm.
And that's the way to keep them loyal.
Yeah.
And he's learned pretty fast that you need this. So just 4 months after Cicero has helped Octavian to this limited, but still for his age, quite extraordinary power, it is starting to fall apart with the Senate. We've had the inevitable back and forth. And I think this is the fourth. Octavian still has possession of one of the dead consuls' legions. That's Pansa. And the Senate says, well, you've got to give that up. That's not your army. Or not your legion, and he doesn't. So that means no longer buddying with the Senate, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That legion stays loyal to him. He probably told them it was the Senate blocking their extra pay. That would be a way to make them loyal, I think. Instead of all of that, in June, Octavian sends 400 men to Rome to insist that he be made consul, because this worked before when he wanted Imperium. This time it's the Senate's turn to say no. So Antony said no to him. He said no to the Senate. It's all just people saying no at the moment. And Octavian, who now has 8 legions, count them, he's been amassing a lot of troops. He marches on Rome.
Mm.
I have to say that he does not talk about this in the Res Gestae. All of that comes under that I liberated them from slavery, really.
This all comes, though, as a page out of Caesar's book, really. Just marching into Rome and taking what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Demanding what you want by sword.
We've got Dio telling us quite a bit of detail for this period too. He tells us the Senate forbade the army to come closer than 100 miles of Rome. And they tried to ward Octavian off by saying he could stand for the consulship in absentia.
Mm.
So just give him some cookies. Maybe he'll be all right with us. I mean, the Senate really is not, they have no power and they're not acting very wisely. Octavian apparently says kind of won't do this because he's worried about the safety of his mother, Artia, and his sister, Octavia, which might actually be true. They're hiding out with the Vestals at this point. So they obviously do feel in danger. So the Senate somehow manages to cobble together three legions, but they don't have a general, so this is not great. And the troops then defect to Octavian, so they've just given him more troops. He has a massive army of 11 legions now. And just for you, Matt,
yes,
he also has an omen. Six vultures appear as he gets to the Campus Martius.
The omens don't always have to be for me. They can be for Octavian.
Well, no, I mean, I know they please you. I believe the numbers are different in different accounts, but that's the Dio Cassius account, the number of vultures.
Yeah.
The exact time they turn up. Either way, and the Campus Martius, if true, is obviously a good signifier of military valor. It's the place where they do their maneuvers, Field of Mars. So it's all looking good for Octavian. Of course, Dio knows what's going to happen, but hey.
So he becomes the youngest ever consul then?
Does. 19th of August, they say, okay, you can be consul. He gets elected consul. We need two because they've both been killed.
Yeah.
Along with a family member of his, Quintus Pedius, and more vultures appear depending on which version you read. He's got himself engaged as well to Servilia, the daughter of Publius Servilius Isauricus, who was a mate of Caesar's. And for anyone who's watched HBO Rome, Simon Callow played him. His adoption is now ratified by law. This is what he really wanted.
That's been a long time coming.
Yeah, well, longer than he wanted anyway, but it is still only the 19th of August, 43. It goes through the Curia Assembly, so all official, no questions asked. His soldiers are now paid 10 times their normal salary. This will be key to keeping them on side. Caesar's murder is now made an official crime, so any kind of pretense that he was going to buddy up with the assassins or pretend that it didn't happen, kiss and make up, that's not happening.
Yeah, that's so a big step, yeah.
Yeah. He has a special court set up by his friend Agrippa to try the murderers. Not just the murderers, though. It's wider than that. It's anybody who knew about it.
That's obviously a lot of people.
Well, yeah, but also open to
manipulation.
Manipulation, just, yeah. You know.
You could just make an easy accusation.
Interpretation, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, you were seen in the presence of this person.
Or didn't they try to recruit Cicero? And
Yeah. Well, he's not going to end up well from all of this.
Well, no, but, you know, not because of this specifically. No.
The next stage will do for Cicero, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Okay, so they put everyone on trial, even if they're not there, and they're all found guilty. Every single one of them. Anyway, we now need to decide what we're going to do about Antony, if we're Octavian. Broken with the Senate, clearly don't need the Senate anymore because you're much more powerful than them. I think he's still just 19. But he needs Antony if he's going to pursue Brutus and Cassius. So it's all very well declaring everyone guilty and presumably pursuing those who are still around. But Brutus and Cassius are off east. They went off to their provinces.
So those two are seen as being the biggest threats / ringleaders, really, of this entire operation.
Exactly. And they've been let off scot-free from Octavian's point of view. So this time he's going up there to help Antony act against Decimus Brutus. So he really has swapped sides because he was with the Senate helping him out last time.
Yes, and he was against Antony.
Yes. When he gets there, Decimus's troops, do you have three guesses?
Defect.
Yes. Yeah. It's the pattern, isn't it? Well, to either him or to Antony, either way, they go over to the Caesarian side. So there's not really any reason for Octavian to be there. Decimus isn't a threat anymore except to meet with Antony. So it becomes clear that that's what he wants. We don't know exactly where. This is different in different sources. It's on an island in a river, maybe at Mutina, according to Appian. Some people think that that would be tasteless after a nasty battle had happened there. Maybe just outside Bologna. Appian starts a whole new book for this in the Civil Wars. He says it was a big occasion. They were allowed five legions each, so they've got kind of rules as they draw near the bridge to the island. 300 troops each when they get close, showing your great forces, but they're not going to get close enough to do damage to the participants.
Yeah.
The mediator in all of this is Lepidus, who's going to be important in the alliance that they form, who checked that no one was bringing their 300 troops over with them, something like that.
Mm.
They met outdoors so that they were visible.
Interesting. Yeah, so really playing it safe, but also showing that you've got enough men to call in case something happens.
So it just seems very, very performative, you know, the way that it's all organized.
It's also interesting that Antony is now taking Octavian seriously to this level. You know, they've met, quotation fingers, on the battlefield, and Octavian has overrode the Senate, and this is the person that I now need to deal with if I want any power.
Yeah, it must have been impressive to Antony the way that he had kind of used the Senate.
Mm.
And he's amassed 11 legions. That's actually a good thought. I hadn't really thought about Antony's state of mind at this time. I'm thinking more about Octavian at the moment, but exactly. Anyway, 2 days of debate, and they form what we call the Second Triumvirate.
Okay, so what powers does Octavian have now? It's all self-ordained, pretty much.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly. We know that they said it was going to last 5 years. They, the word triumvirate is apparently not, well, it's definitely not grammatically correct, but that doesn't really matter. They call themselves the Tres Republicae. They're three men for kind of preserving the republic. But they have a five-year limit. This isn't a dictatorship. We're not going to mention that word. And also, it's not going to be that form of power, especially an unending dictatorship, because that leads to bad things. And they don't want people assassinating them. But we don't know exactly what the powers were that were laid out in this agreement. Octavian seems to have later got rid of anything that would count against him. I mean, this is illegal, this triumvirate. The first triumvirate was illegal as well, but it kind of wasn't as official as this.
Yeah.
It was not a, you know, a written down alliance. So Appian tells us in 36 he began to burn documents relating to the civil conflict. So probably anything that would have told us that is gone. What we can kind of infer is that they had imperium and they had consular powers. And they could nominate magistrates. So they're starting to get that control over who will have the other roles of government.
Mm.
They could make laws and have a sphere of power in the empire. Now, this will change, but initially Antony gets Gaul, Cisalpine and Transalpine. Lepidus gets Spain and Narbonensis. Octavian gets Africa, Sicily and Sardinia. Now, these are all really difficult places because there's conflict there, but there's also grain there. Could be troublesome, but could be powerful. The fact that Octavian now gives up the consulship, I mean, he hasn't had it that long. He's had it since August. He gives it up for the last month or so of the year.
Yeah, but he's got everything good from the consulship.
Yeah.
If they make another consul, well, they'd have no power because they're being overwritten by these three.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That suggests that being a triumvir is a superior power.
Mm.
And you're quite right that he's got what he wanted out of the consulship, which was acknowledgement that he is Caesar's heir in terms of power as well as land.
Mm.
So they give him all the difficult jobs. I think they're still trying to shove up the rubbish stuff onto Octavian. He agrees that he will establish 18 veteran colonies in Italy. Pretty much means throwing people off their land. There's going to be a lot of that. Again, if he's successful, the army will be extremely loyal to him. Tough jobs that could make him really powerful.
Big risk, big reward.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And indeed, he does brag about this in the Res Gestae. He says in the third chapter, I settled more than 300,000 veterans in colonies or their own towns. It's something he's proud of. Remember he was meant to marry Servilia?
Yes.
He doesn't. He gets engaged instead to Clodia, who is the daughter of Antony's wife, Fulvia.
Mm.
Keeping up with the family trees here. Bit of debate about whether he actually married her in the end. Okay. Cheery subject coming up next, Matt. What do you think follows a triumvirate?
Yeah, a prescription.
Yeah.
Making a big list was probably part of that meeting that they were at. And it probably would have been on the forefront of Octavian's mind.
Yeah.
After setting up the courts.
Yeah, because you've got lists of enemies.
Mm.
And the prescription lists are lists of people who are declared enemies of the state. They can be killed and a certain amount of their property will go to the state, a certain amount to the person who gets rid of them. We discussed this particular round of prescriptions because it's not the first.
Mm.
back in episode CLXXXVI. I did write that one down. That is 186, I think.
That's in April 2022.
Okay. Now, Octavian, I mean, this is mass murder, basically. And Octavian's part in it is later absolutely minimized. So his biographers excuse him. Suetonius says, oh, he never wanted it at all. You know, chapter 27 of the biography, Augustus. But you know what? Octavian had plenty of enemies. Can't imagine he was actually fanning himself and saying, oh, no, no, we can't possibly do that. He had all the enemies of Caesar to start with.
Yeah.
Brutus and Cassius are going to be at the top, although they've already been found guilty, of course. Another thing the triumvirate does is they declare the deification of Julius Caesar. So he becomes Divus Julius. And by 40, Octavian is definitely calling himself son of a god. It might be earlier than that.
That's going to be useful. Okay, so they have their triumvirate. They make up their prescription list. They kill all their enemies who are in Rome. The big target being Brutus and Cassius. How are they dealt with? That's an entire war, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, it'll certainly be a big battle at Philippi. Octavian has time to do this after he's kind of had an initial failure against Sextus Pompeius, who's kind of another remnant of the Republican cause. He's failed to get rid of him from Sicily, which is his remit. And now it's time to go east because he's sort of had a go at that via somebody else, via Rufus. But he's decided now he'll go east to get Brutus and Cassius. And remember, he had 11 legions before. Well, now between him and with Antony, they've got 28 legions.
Wow.
Massive army.
That's huge.
However, when they get to Philippi in northern Greece, which is where they finally meet Brutus and Cassius, I think this happens almost every battle that we've encountered so far. Octavian is unwell. I don't think he's just staging unwell for battles because he seems to be genuinely unwell a lot of the time. He has this mystery illness. But he goes in after Antony anyway. His troops are kind of on the side that Brutus is attacking, and he does very poorly against Brutus, who captures his camp. Antony defeats Cassius. The nastiest account we have of this, or the kind of least
flattering
one to Octavian, comes from the elder Pliny, who says that he hides out in a nearby marsh for 3 days. Other sources aren't quite as mean.
I'm kind of inclined to say that Pliny was probably talking more about marshes and just mentioned Octavian at that point.
It's book 7 of Pliny's Natural History, which is his one on...
Plants.
No, it's not. It could be so much, but it's actually the one on humans.
Okay, all right.
So I think it might be... We're in a room where I don't have my blurbs in front of me, but he might actually be talking about human fears or,
you know. Sorry to put you on the spot.
Emotions. One way or another, and you do it. We have an episode on this battle in a lot more detail.
We do, Battle of Philippi. Yep.
Yes. Do you want to give the number out there? Well, you don't have to.
Episode CLXXXVII.
Okay.
Back in late April 2022.
When it was all happening. But it doesn't matter that Octavian doesn't do so well. The triumvirs win out. Octavian will later take all of the credit. The res gestae again, it's his own words. I drove my father's assassins into exile through the law courts, taking revenge for their crime. And afterwards, I defeated them twice in battle while they were making war upon the state.
Wow. That's some impressive washing.
Yeah.
He's just stringing that laundry right across Rome.
Someday we should maybe just go sentence by sentence through the res gestae and see which bits of it are potentially true. And it won't be that much. Well,
fact-checking.
Certainly for the early stuff.
Fact-checking the res gestae.
Yeah, indeed.
But the aftermath is he gets exactly what he wants, gets revenge for Caesar. He's essentially holding Rome. And he and Antony can retire together and be good friends.
That's exactly what happens.
Exactly.
Happy ending, they shake hands.
All right. That's been a good podcast. Great.
It's not what happens. For one thing, Octavian's cruelty afterwards. So this is as against his own words. And, you know, we've seen that the biographies are, except for Nicolaus, they're not unkind, but they do give us a bit more unvarnished truth and Appian's history as well. And certainly Suetonius is shocked at how cruel he is after Philippi. Anyone who knew about the assassination, or he suspects might have known about it, are killed. And the killings are brutal. A huge number of people die.
Mm.
Coming home, he's ill again. It's not enough to feel sorry for him at this point, though, having as he's been involved in so much needless slaughter. And as proof that he's not that popular at this point, there's a rumour that he's died. And Dio tells us that some were filled with joy because of this. Mm. Because they hated him at this point. Anyway, he's not dead. And he now has the job of finding land for all the veterans of that massive 28-legion army. He is nearly lynched at the games at the Ludi for removing a soldier from the equestrian seats, where he's not meant to be. The soldier's in the wrong place, according to Status. And basically, he has to buy the army off to kind of get back to even some semblance of popularity.
Mm.
This period is really not, it's not a great one for Octavian. You might think he's got everything he wanted. I'm not going to go into all the detail. I refer to episode CXCVII. He has to face down Antony's brother, Lucius, and his wife, Fulvia. Lucius is consul and seems to be obstructing Octavian's attempts to redistribute land. Now, Octavian wins out here, but he must have suspected that Antony supported Lucius and Fulvia. Right, so it's very easy to kind of shove the blame, especially onto Fulvia, who dies shortly afterwards. But there were more stories of Octavian's brutal treatment of the enemy, including human sacrifice.
Wow, yeah.
It would have been a horrible time to be in Italy. Mm. I mean, there haven't been any nice times recently, but this one certainly isn't one of them.
How does he leave it with Antony then? Because this is a diverging point for them again.
It is, yeah. At the Treaty of Brundisium, they redivide the Roman world. Octavian does better, to be honest. Mark Antony now gets the east, so he's kind of moved on from wanting Gaul. Octavian gets the west. He gets Gaul, Italy, and also Illyricum. Lepidus now gets Africa. This is a sign of power shifts between the three of them.
Yeah.
And on paper, Mark Antony has got the wealthiest part of the empire. I think that must have been how he saw it. But again, Octavian has got the home turf. He can make himself a bit more popular there. That, I think, might be job number one. Mark Antony marries Octavia at this point, Octavian's sister. So that's how they sew that all together.
Mm.
So we've now got to pretty much the end of the 40s. It's taken me a while to get from the death of Caesar to the 30s. We're going to be a bit briefer on the 30s and we won't quite get to the end of them.
So the last remnant of almost, you know, a Republican resistance at the moment is Sextus Pompeius, who is the second son of Pompey, I want to say, who you mentioned earlier before was causing trouble down in Sicily. And he's still causing trouble down in Sicily, which is for Octavian disrupting the grain supplies.
Absolutely.
Which is not a good thing.
No, there are food shortages and riots. Augustus tells us later, I made the sea peaceful and freed it from pirates. And that's how he glosses over dealing with Sextus Pompeius.
Calls him a pirate. He's a
pirate, yeah. Exactly. Now, this had been a kind of complicated relationship, which I won't go into an awful lot of detail with, because initially they'd had to kind of negotiate with him something called the Treaty of Misenum, and Sextus had actually got land. He'd got several islands, which breaks down, you know, doesn't work. But the treaty had allowed, from Octavian's point of view, something important, the return of exiles, including Tiberius Claudius Nero and his wife Livia Drusilla.
Mm.
And she is going to be the really important wife of Octavian. But he is already married. In 40, he had married Scribonia, who was, by the way, related to Sextus Pompey's wife. So maybe a strategic marriage. Of course, he divorced Scribonia the moment Julia was born, his daughter, his only legitimate child, and married Livia in 39, 3 days after her second son was born. Drusus was actually born in Octavian's house and then immediately sent to his father.
Classy.
Weird.
Yeah. Romans.
It's possible even, and this is the bit I love best, but it's complex. Livia's father had adopted Scribonia's nephew. So the old wife, Scribonia, might even have introduced him to the new wife, Livia.
Right.
It's different. Now, when Sextus comes back in 38, there are food riots in Rome. This is a problem for Octavian. He's the one who's meant to be in charge in Italy. And then he gets defeated by Sextus at sea. This is not great. So he's not winning wars all the time here. He needs Mark Antony's help.
Again.
So they meet up at Tarentum because the very last day of 38 is meant to be the end of the Second Triumvirate, right? Which is already more than 5 years because they made the pact in November 43. So it's 5 years and a bit. And now it's 37 and they're still acting like it's there.
Mm.
So they have to kind of make it official again. And Mark Antony gives him 120 ships so he can pursue Sextus in exchange for Octavian giving Mark Antony 20,000 soldiers. Octavian never hands them over. He's learning. He's learning. Yeah. You can make the promises and just not do it. He ends up losing again to Sextus. He nearly dies at sea, but in the end, Agrippa comes through and defeats Sextus at the Battle of Naulochus in September 36. Sextus dies shortly after that. Octavian actually faces a mutiny in Sicily, but he deals with it very ruthlessly by just getting rid of one of the significant rebels. They're just never seen again. They are disappeared.
Right.
Yeah.
Thus dies the Republic.
Indeed. Anyway, the Triumvirate is renewed for another 5 years. They do it about 6 months late because, as I say, it had expired. Octavian passes a law to make it okay, to protect himself, to like tide him over those however many months. We don't know exactly how many. Mark Antony doesn't even bother.
Yeah, right.
He don't care. That's the impression I get anyway.
Mm.
These tensions between them, though, are going to continue. I mean, the fact that they need a treaty, well, A, to give themselves power, but also to bind themselves together is not a great sign. There's a lot of back and forth here. Octavian has taken control of Mark Antony's legions in Gaul very early on. He's making his power base in Italy and the West generally. Any legions he doesn't trust, he just throws over to Africa, to Lepidus. So he's got an army that they've been with him a long time. They're getting to be, they were loyal to him anyway, but even more loyal to him generally. Mark Antony has gone east to prepare for the Parthian War. That war that's going to have been happening for so long. Caesar was preparing for it in 44 when he was murdered.
Mm.
And of course, if he had been able to claim victory against Parthia, that would have been so much power and authority and honor for him. But the risk there is that he has allowed Octavian to make Italy his own, to build his base of loyalty there. And indeed, Augustus will later say in the Res Gestae, which I've quoted a lot in this episode, the whole of Italy of its own accord swore an oath of allegiance to me and demanded me as its commander.
That was Rhiannon Evans, and you have been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you'd like to reach out, Emperors of Rome is on Facebook. We are at Rome Podcast on Instagram, and you can send us an email at emperorspodcast@gmail.com. Emperors of Rome is an independent podcast, now on Patreon. This month's bonus episode looks at the relationship between Octavian and Cicero. Here's a clip.
Cicero had made a witticism about Octavian. Now, just, you know, don't roll in the aisles too much. he said, the youth should, and it does sound better in Latin.
I was about to say, does this lose something in the translation?
It kind of does because it's sort of rhymey Latin. Yeah. Or, you know, the rhythm of it works.
Yeah.
The youth should be praised, honored, and raised up. So that all sounds very like he's praising him, like he's actually saying that Octavian's the greatest thing evs.
Mm.
But the Latin laudandum adolescentem ornandum tollendum, the word tollendum at the end means raised up, but it can also mean kind of taken out, removed, killed.
Right. Okay.
This is in a letter. It's actually a letter from Decimus Brutus in a letter to Cicero. And Decimus says, Octavian knows that you've said that.
Thanks to everyone who supports the podcast. You can hear the complete bonus episode and give your support at patreon.com/Rome Podcast. This podcast has been recorded and produced in Melbourne, Australia, on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic. And thanks for listening.